And we have another very, very kind and intelligent gentleman like yourself. His name, listen to him and laugh. It's true, Rich. Come on.
Where's the handsome? I need
and
handsome.
And you're a handsome. I'm looking at your picture right now. Your images.
And certainly more intelligent.
Well, listen, Rich Lowry from the National Review, syndicated columnist. He's all over TV. He's an analyst, and he's a very nice guy. In any case, Rich Lowry, I just mentioned that Bill O'Reilly has a column on a critical race theory, and your latest column happens to be about a guy who's pushing this racism in schools left and right and in college campuses, but at corporations, everywhere. This guy, his name is Ibram X. Kendi. Tell us about your column, The Incredible Lightness of Ibram X. Kendi's Anti-Racism.
Yeah, this guy's become an industry. I mean, he must be making $10 million a year or something, just shoveling in. And Ezra Klein, who's this wonky progressive guy at the New York Times, did a podcast with him about an hour long, just asking how his worldview would actually work in important instances. And it was just devastating to Kendi, I thought, especially on the question of policing. So Klein asked him, so is defunding the police a quote-unquote anti-racist policy? And he couldn't answer, because obviously you defund the police, more black kids get killed. So anti-racist? But if you have, you know, more cops, more black kids with guns are going to get arrested. So that can't be anti-racist either. So he just danced around and evaded and couldn't answer this basic policy question, because even under his own premises, whichever position he took, he'd be racist. So it was really, I thought, just devastating evisceration by a friendly interviewer.
But a stroke of genius on these people's part. Not really, not necessarily genius, but they use terms like anti-racism, for example, antifa, anti-fascist, when they're anything but. They're exactly that.
Exactly.
So it's a slick move on their part.
Hey, Rich, this is Pete King. I don't know if you recall, we first met having breakfast in Pete's Diner in Washington when you were just a reporter for National Review. Now you're
an
a big shot. You know, I'm surprised you even talked to us. You're so high up in the totem pole now. Seriously, you know, other than people like you and Heather McDonald, a few, everyone seems to accept this thing that cops are inherently racist. I'm talking about, you're the media now. I hope the man in the street doesn't believe this. The fact is that blacks are being stigmatized. They are being victimized. They're being targeted. And, you know, none of the statistics bear that out. Nothing bears it out other than this bias. It's there in the media. So thank God for this column you wrote. How do you see this going? I mean, what's your political sense? Are the people going to revolt and react against this?
Well, we have this conversation a lot on this show. When is the big backlash going to come? And we've seen some indications of it, you know, the school board fights around the country, pushing back against CRT in the schools. And I think Eric Adams, although, you know, I'm only guardedly optimistic, and he's not mayor yet, he still has to beat Curtis. But that's a sign, you know, a Democratic constituency and a real blue city, if you really have chaos in the streets, they say, please give us something better. Give us common sense. And at least Adams talked that way on crime. And we'll see whether he actually follows through. But I think that sent a very important message to Democrats around the country, not that necessarily that they heed it, but that even Democrats want this mayhem to stop. And the way to stop, it's pretty easy. I mean, you stop and frisk people you think are carrying illegal guns, and if they are, you arrest them. And if you arrest them, you put them in jail, and you prosecute them. But every part of that chain has been broken in New York and cities around the country, so you just have gunplay and murder every single day.
And the fact is there have always been guns coming in, but the cops, by being on the street, by having those anti-crime units, have been able to grab the guys who are using them. Also, you know, you mentioned something that I think most people in politics, including myself, never pay that much attention to, and that's the local school boards. There's a good friend of our family, this woman, Melissa. She lives in Belmore. She's going to these school board meetings now. The mothers and fathers who are now seeing what's going on, they could be the political force in the 2022 elections. For the most part, they stayed out of politics. They were just confined to PTA and, you know, actually get involved on day-to-day issues. But they are now really getting caught up in the whole, you know, the social issues, the Black Lives Matter, the critical race theory, the fact of crime coming in. So I think that could be a force that the Democrats are ignoring, and Republicans should really pay attention to it to mobilize it and harness it in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I don't have to tell you out there watching things out there in Long Island, but Republicans have lost ground among suburbanites, need to gain it back. And an easy way to gain it back is for parents to be convinced the schools are going to start telling their kids that they should feel guilty because they're white. And that's why I think you're absolutely right. You've seen a lot of people involved that weren't involved before. And then just a wonderful thing about the federalist system in this country is education is a hyper-local thing. You can win a school board seat by going and getting, I don't know, 200 signatures on a petition and then getting, you know, 800, 900 votes in some of these communities. And then you're on the school board and you have more influence on what's taught in your local schools than the Secretary of Education. That's a huge deal, and people got to take advantage of it.
It really is a growing strength. Has really not been there for years. They've been confined locally. Now they are really speaking out and being very, very emphatic, and, you know, people are listening.
Yeah, it is. Yep. It's the grassroots rebellion, I guess. Rich Lowry from the National Review, syndicated columnist on the Bernie and Sid Show with Congressman Peter King. And I mentioned earlier this local sports writer in the New York Post, Phil Mushnick. He wrote a great column about, the NFL employing the black national anthem alongside with the regular national anthem. And he asked this question: what will happen this season? Should black fans stay seated during the white anthem? Should white customers remain seated during the black anthem? And he asked a lot of other good questions. But Rich Lowry, you wrote a column before he did, and it was entitled "The Assault on America's National Identity" on the same issue. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, one, I love Phil Mushnick, and everyone in sports media hates him when he comes after you as a broadcaster, usually, because he gets the lazy cliches that everyone resorts to. But he's absolutely right. And what we're heading towards is having a black national anthem and the actual national anthem considered a white national anthem, when the national anthem belongs to all of us. Same thing with July 4th. We're going to have a black July 4th with Juneteenth, and then a white July 4th on the actual July 4th, when July 4th is about the independence of our country for everyone. That wasn't, you know, incompletely realized at the beginning, tragically, but it belongs to all of us. But instead, we're going to divide up along the lines of race, and this is just a really bad thing. And ultimately, we go down this route, we'll destroy the country and its institutions.
You're absolutely right. The only thing that unites us is that we're all American in this multi-ethnic, racial country. Rich Lowry, on the way out, I just have to ask you about, we were talking, Congressman King and I, about Pelosi's move to strip this January 6th committee of Congressman Jim Jordan and Congressman Banks, because, well, apparently she's afraid of them. What do you think of this move and this committee in general? Is it necessary?
Well, I think the move is self-defeating for Pelosi, because the play for her all along was to have a committee that could pursue partisan ends but have a bipartisan patina to it. And all she had to do is accept these Republicans, and it's a bipartisan committee. And she would have achieved her goal, or at least a step towards her goal. Instead, she, in an unprecedented move, rejects these two guys. And she might not like them, but, Pete knows, these sort of committees have a diversity of views all the time, and they have some people who really want to investigate and other people who think the premises are wrong. And that's what makes the world go round in the Capitol. So I think this is a real mistake on her part.
Absolutely. Just unbelievable. But look, Rich Lowry, we're out of time. You're great. And you are a great guy and a handsome guy, I will say that. editor, again, a columnist for the National Review, syndicated columnist all over TV, Rich Lowry. Check him out at nationalreview.com. Rich, you have a great week, and thank you. We'll speak to you next week.
You too.
Great talking to you, Rich.